You noted in your piece, broadly speaking, WEEC's plan can be divided into two parts, redistricting and funding. Last year, redistricting drew the headlines and debate. This year, funding is moving front and center. Why that shift?
Well, two things. Remember, the commission's name is the Wilmington Education Improvement Commission, and it was born from former Governor Markell's desire to transform those so-called priority schools, these high-poverty schools in the Wilmington portion of the Red Clay and Christina school districts that had performed poorly on statewide standardized tests. So, quite naturally, when the commission suggested moving troubled Christina schools into Red Clay, that would get the most attention. However, one of the concerns raised when the issue reached the General Assembly last spring was downstate lawmakers saw this as a plan that would funnel more money into Wilmington than into schools in Kent and Sussex. So the commission's emphasis this year is that many schools in Kent and Sussex have demographics similar to those in Wilmington, and they need help too. And the funding plan that they're working on would spread new funding throughout the state.
We started to see a little bit of that at the end of last legislative session as lawmakers were addressing the funding piece of this plan. They wanted to make sure that the discussion was not limited to Wilmington, that if something was going to be done for the cities, you said, that other places also got assistance. I would expect that assistance, that push for assistance elsewhere is going to be on lawmakers' minds as well as WEEC's mind.
Well, yes, exactly. I mean, Wilmington may have the largest number of low-income students and English language learners in the state, but the second largest grouping of low-income students is in the Dover area, and the fastest growth of English language learners is in western and central Sussex County. And consider this, too. One half of the state's public school population comes from what are considered low-income families. So make no mistake about it, this is indeed a statewide issue.
The other issue that lawmakers, though, have to deal with is a $350 million budget hole that needs to be addressed. With that in mind, a major move to add to education spending seems unlikely. So what is WEEC suggesting to do to get the ball rolling, at least in some way, shape, or form?
Well, WEEC's suggestion is that we phase in this additional funding. Start by providing extra funding in Red Clay and for the Christina schools that might be moving into the Red Clay district, and include a pilot program in two downstate districts, one in Kent County and one in Sussex. As WEEC Chair Tony Allen puts it, we don't think the General Assembly can take a full bite of the apple at this time.
You mentioned that there's a financial impact study that WEEC is going to be looking at next week when they meet, assessing the cost of moving Christina's city schools into Red Clay. What's the scope of that study, and do we have any sense of what it may say? Last year we heard a lot of different numbers, ranging from $6 to $9 million to make that move. There even seems to be some more numbers now as people continue to look at what exactly this means for those schools and those two districts.
Well, as for the impact study, I really don't have a clear idea of what that's going to say. The WEEC leaders want the full commission to see the report before they give me the details, and that's going to happen on Tuesday night. But what we do know is that the report will lay out how the amounts of state funding that would flow into Christina and Red Clay would change if this redistricting is approved. And it'll look at what happens to local property tax revenues when the portion of Christina that is in Wilmington becomes part of Red Clay. Also, the report is expected to examine how the redistricting could impact the flow of federal funds that come into both districts. As for the cost estimates, $6 million to $9 million was the range that WEEC and legislators were talking about last year. In his final budget proposal, outgoing Governor Jack Markell split the difference and put $7.5 million aside for the upcoming fiscal year to cover first-year costs. Governor Carney's transition team, of which WEEC Chair Tony Allen was a member, recommended putting $15 million in the budget. So you see, we've got numbers all over the place, certainly the figures are significant when you're looking at a big budget deficit as well.
And considering the budget situation and this price tag that we're talking about, how are proponents going to sell this plan this year? Where do they find support amongst lawmakers and elsewhere?
Well, that's a good question, and I wish I had the answer, and I think I wish they had the answer, too. I mean, everybody's talking about plugging this $350 million budget gap, and nobody seems to be talking about spending money on anything new. And, you know, certainly unexpected developments like the issues currently with the state prison system may suggest that some money is going to get directed there rather than in other places that that the governor and his aides might have been thinking about even a month or two ago. On top of that, you know, Susan Bunting, who is Carney's Secretary of Education, isn't optimistic about extra money being found this year, and neither is Representative Earl Jakes, who is chairman of the House Education Committee.
And it's interesting because our political reporter, Jimmy Dawson, has been saying all along that a lot of things have just been on pause anyway, waiting for this 10th district special election to be decided to determine whether or not there's going to be a Republican state senate or a Democratic state senate. That could also change the mix. So there are a lot of variables here that need to be considered. And another variable that's come up recently is the governor himself, John Carney. It seems, based on some of the things he said in a telephone town hall this past week, that he may want to hit the pause button on WEAC because of the budget and possibly even form another group like WEAC to examine education in Delaware. How much more difficult does this whole process become if the governor is not providing support?
Well, yeah, that's going to be quite a challenge. As you mentioned, on Wednesday night, in this telephone town hall, the governor threw some cold water on this undefined weighted funding plan that WEAC is working on, and then he mentioned the idea that he might like to see yet one more study on how to best meet the needs of these children in high poverty schools. I don't know. They're going to have to continue the push. They're going to have to make the case that if you don't spend the money now, you're going to have to spend it later in other forms, that putting this off is going to make these children fall even farther behind. I mean, you know, it's too early. The plan hasn't even gotten in front of the General Assembly yet, so it's really too early to label it dead on arrival. But geez, you know, it might right now already be on life support.
I do want to go back and talk about weighted funding for a moment, because you mentioned that. Without getting too into the weeds with it, conceptually, what are we talking about when we talk about weighted funding for schools?
Well, when you're talking about weighted funding in light of the state's unit system, where a certain number of students equals a unit, and that unit equates to essentially the state paying for the salary of one teacher. So let's take an example and say that if the unit for grades 4 through 12 is 20 students. So if a district has 200 students in that category, it would get funding for 10 teachers. Now let's just say that you make the weight 1.2 instead of 1, so that for every 20 students who are low income, high poverty, whatever, so for every 20 students you would get 1.2 teacher units. If you've got 200 students, that means money for 12 teachers rather than 10. What happens if this weighted program were approved, when that money goes to the districts? Not clear whether that means that they would have to spend it on teachers or whether they could spend it on paraprofessionals, other support types. But in any case, the idea behind the weighted funding is more money for kids who have these specially identified needs funneling into the districts for their use to provide programs for these kids.
As we've noted previously, as we've covered WEAC, there is a timeline at work here. Where do we stand with that timeline, and what could that mean for redistricting, depending on what is or isn't done in the next 6 to 8 months?
Okay. Well, here's the deal. If the plan's approved by the General Assembly this year, student and staff reassignments would take place at the start of the 2019-2020 school year. The time in between would be used for transition planning. If the plan doesn't get approved until next year, the redistricting gets pushed back another 12 months. However, here's the big deadline. If the plan isn't approved by June 30th of 2018, it's officially dead. No redistricting, no supplemental funding, nothing to improve conditions in schools that both educators and elected officials agree have the greatest needs.
So what happens if the plan isn't approved, or isn't approved just because the funding just isn't there to support it. Are there other paths forward? Is that perhaps why John Carney is looking at another WEAC type group, because he's already looking at the possibility that it's not going to get done by that deadline?
Well, yes, there are probably other paths forward. It's unclear what they are, and certainly there's nothing on the table that, or even being thought about being put on the table, that's nearly as comprehensive as what WEAC has proposed. You know, Representative Jakes mentioned the possibility of separate legislation that would put the Wilmington portion of the Christina district under the control of another district. But when I talked to him, he didn't spell out any details on that. Representative Kim Williams, who used to be a member of the Red Clay School Board, is sponsoring legislation that would provide additional funding for kids, special education students in kindergarten through third grade. It's interesting, you know, this proposal, because the state now screens infants to determine whether they might need special services when they're ready to go to school, and yet the state doesn't provide funds for special help for them in public school until they reach the fourth grade. So Tony Allen from WEAC, he makes the point that the state spends more than $1.2 billion a year on education. If the legislature can't find new funds to put into education, he says, maybe it's time for the state to look and reprioritize the money that it's spending now so it does include money to put these initiatives in the budget. Now, there are other people who follow education issues fairly closely. DSEA President Frederica Jenner, Rodell Foundation Head Paul Herdman, Charter Schools Network Leader Kendall Massett. When I spoke with them in the last couple of days, all of them credit WEAC with bringing these important issues to the table and forcing a serious discussion. So even if nothing happens this year, they say the issue is too big to go away. And as you can see, if the state doesn't come up with a better way to serve its neediest children, these reform advocates say it's going to spend more money on them later, and they're not talking about spending that money in the classroom.
And with all that in mind, particularly from the standpoint of WEAC, is there a certain urgency that is growing at this point?
Absolutely. You know, when the state faces a deficit, one possible solution is to raise taxes. And as we all know, hardly anybody likes to see tax increases. But 2017 is not an election year. So under normal circumstances, it would be more likely for the legislature to approve a tax hike this year, not next year, when the entire House and half the Senate are up for re-election.
And even if something does get approved, clearly it's not a silver bullet. Education in Wilmington is much more complex than just shifting low-income students in their schools from one district to another. Where do people feel the conversation needs to go to really address education in Wilmington?
Well, it's got to go clearly beyond funding, beyond redistricting, and there are you know, too many different possibilities to outline in the time that we have here. Even if the redistricting and funding are approved, there are still many more concerns. You have more than 10,000 students who live in the city of Wilmington, and they're now being, and if the redistricting occurs, they will be educated by a combination of two traditional school districts, a vocational school district, the boards of seven charter schools located in the city, and eight other charters in the nearby suburbs that accept Wilmington students. Each one of these entities has a different approach to education, and Tony Allen says they're not known for collaborating with each other very well. So there's got to be some more coherent oversight. A couple things that I might toss out here. Maybe there's room for a partnership between Red Clay and Brandywine to coordinate how they're serving students in the city. Maybe there's some way to create like a super board of representatives of all of the charter schools. Things like that might help. But, you know, where all this heads, I'm not sure. But this commission has spent thousands of hours trying to draw a roadmap for a better future for Delaware public education. I haven't seen anything like it in the 45 years that I've been following public education in the state. Is this the best possible plan? We may never know, but it's comprehensive, it's detailed, and in my view, it deserves to be given a chance.